This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Well, if you were sleeping hard the other night, last night, you may have missed one of the biggest trades, I think, in recent NBA history, memory. And more than likely, you're saying to yourself, well, why are you talking about this to start your show today? Because it does affect the Timberwolves. It's two teams in the Western Conference that both of which are at least wrapped around the Timberwolves, involving the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers of whatever. They're still Los Angeles, right? They're just Los Angeles.
Of Anaheim.
They're one of the few.
Of Anaheim, Southern California, and so forth. So three teams involved, Lakers, Mavericks, Jazz. It's a three-team swap. Basically, there's players going all over the place, but the one that you really care about here, Anthony Davis goes for Luka Doncic, which is so intriguing to me because we were all texting about this last night, and all of us, all of our first reactions were, what? Yeah. What in the world? So here's my, and this is the first thing I thought of, Pete. This is as plain and simple as it is. We can look at numbers. You can look at championships. You can look at play. You can look at all that. But to me, why in the world would you trade a guy in his mid-20s, late-20s, for a guy who's in his mid to late-30s, even if he's Anthony Davis? And Doncic, we all saw him play great last year against the Timberwolves. Yes, he's one of the most annoying players in the NBA when it comes to flopping and complaining.
The worst.
He is, well, the guy the from...
Worst. Well, he's joining the worst.
Yes. Yeah, the guy from Denver might give him a run for his money.
Yeah, but LeBron's really high on the list, man.
Yeah. I just...
For a guy who's big and strong, and he gets knocked over by a fingernail touch on him, and LeBron falls
like
to
a
the
soccer
ground.
Player.
I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, it's ridiculous what these guys do.
Pete, your thoughts? I do have a question regarding this that I think you guys would be intrigued by, but...
You're so happy that we're in studio. You're like, I have a question right now.
Look at you. You're ready to roll.
Yeah, I'm the same weight as I was when I last.
By the way, it's 150 in here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
it is a show, baby.
I thought maybe it was just all that man energy coming off Josh. It's just
okay.
What do you got, bro?
What's your question?
We got
something.
Does this indicate anything as far as whether this is LeBron's last year? Like, does this push that retirement question even more so.
What is he, 41 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Bronny experiment, not working out.
Shocker.
I can't imagine that happened.
Well at USC.
He's like 0-48.
Is he in the G League or the Z League? How far down did he go?
He's not doing good.
I mean, not to be overly critical, but for a kid who's gotten a lot of money, I mean, here's a guy who got his NIL money. And meanwhile, he's got his father playing for the Lakers. He's only making $1 billion a year or whatever it is. The whole thing is crazy. But it's not all his fault. It's a lot of it. It has to do, I think, with his dad. But now you've got two different personalities on the Lakers, a team that's doing well, really, really well. They're at the top of the West or whatever. Yeah. It's just amazing to me, or the Pacific, however they divide this whole thing up.
The Metro Atlantic.
So like the Lakers, I think it's AL Central.
Yeah. The Lakers are actually fifth in the West.
They're
playing well, but they're fifth in the West.
Yeah, in the West. It's interesting because when you look at it and you've got Anthony Davis, who's been playing out of his mind this year, doing really, really well, and now you make this trade, it's interesting to me. I think that if I'm Denver, I'm feeling pretty good about this one. As good as Luka is, they got to be sitting there saying, well, you know what? He's always hurt. He's always got some sort of ailment.
He's hurt right now. He's got a calf injury right now.
He's only played 22 games this year.
Yeah.
So he might not be as old as, you know, some of these other players, but he's one of those guys that I don't know how much can you count on him. Is he going to be there?
To be fair, though, we have still like 40 games left. There's still a lot of time for him to recover, could have possibly turned things around for Dallas. I think this move is terrible for Dallas's standpoint. It's not great for LA either. Like, it's such an iffy, like, it's such a huge trade, but I've never seen such like a 60-40 trade. What's that?
Who's going to play center for the Lakers?
Ugh. Yeah, because it ain't AD.
No. AD's going to be loving life.
I'm just surprised.
It's going to be Kareem or somebody. Yeah.
Doncic has what? So they're gonna have to pay him this year. They'll have one more year next year. There's a player option after that when he's 27. So he's 26 years old, 25 years old.
Yeah.
And then he's an unrestricted after that. Clearly Dallas thinks that this helps them win now, maybe, because in terms of statistics, AD is better right now. I mean, he's not. He's playing better. He's healthier than Doncic, but statistically, Doncic is better in terms of scoring. AD's better in defense in terms of rebounds. He can steal. He's got some blocks. I just don't get this. There's got to be a portion of this that's a money move. But to be so short-sighted and say, well, this is a money thing or we want to win now, and to trade away a guy like Doncic who is so dominant inside, the guy can step out and shoot threes, right? And by the way, P.S. to all the Dallas fans out there, if you think taking him away and adding someone else in isn't going to affect the team chemistry at all, come talk to the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
Because they're
takes a little time to get
somebody in. They're having some trouble right now trying to figure out what life's like without Karl Anthony Towns.
It took us a while when you really think about it, with Rudy first. Yeah. And then this year, obviously, after the big trades that they put together. But I want to correct one other thing, too, which is Anthony Davis is only 31. He'll be 32, but he's only 31. Yeah. So I just say that because
Doncic's 25.
Yeah, but he's beat up too.
And I guess. I mean, we're not talking like they're 50 and 60.
I'll take a beat up Doncic shooting the ball though over AD any day.
Yeah.
I just will. He's just that good. He's one of the best overall players.
Here's where LA
made a mistake. Doncic, when we learned this against Minnesota, doesn't defend.
Right. He does not play defense.
Yeah.
Well.
So like, there's
except in the last 30 seconds.
And you took away your one big. You took away AD. Which
so you're kind of going in the direction of me. Who do you like in this trade?
No, like I said though, it's such a 60-40 trade.
I think this is great for LA.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Dallas is on the losing side of this, if you ask me.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, how are you?
I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Dallas.
I don't know why.
Well, because you've got this whiner, you get rid of him, right?
Oh my gosh.
Honestly, I mean, at a point, you finally get tired of it. And a guy who he's a little bit banged up. I know it's just this year, but he's never played a full year ever in his career. Now, load management, probably. But, you know,
I want
you guys
that on
know,
a T-shirt for you so badly.
I'm a huge fan of load management.
I know you love it.
Know. Yeah. And LeBron is the king of that. So I just think this is one of those kind of trades where L.A. is trying to go to the future. What do we do without LeBron? I think that's part of the message
here. It probably is.
So you got a guy who's 25, 26 years old coming in, and a 41-year-old guy with a 32-year-old by the time we get into the playoffs who's on that team. Make the move. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this hurts Dallas as much as you guys think.
I just think it's that downgrade. But, you know,
I agree with Josh. I do.
It just is.
That's always a tough thing to do.
It's just so intriguing to me. Yeah.
I don't agree with myself half the time. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Well,
yeah.
The other thing that's really interesting here is that we rarely see trades this big.
No. Right.
You know, it is so difficult to get the money to match up in any league for that matter. But this is a huge swing by two teams who are trying to get out of where they're in. Then you look at Minnesota, who's right in the middle.
Yeah.
They had a big trade this summer, didn't pan out for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the question to me then is, forget player swap, just in terms of this change to your roster and locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there. This has a big effect when you get rid of a guy. I don't know. Maybe Doncic wasn't liked. I don't know. Maybe AD and LeBron didn't get along. Certainly I could see that.
You
know,
egos
like that. But it's just really interesting because you don't usually see a big, big swing like this because I think of what it does in locker rooms and chemistry. Thoughts?
I'm with you, Dave. I think it's one of these things where when I look at this, I look at what they've got when you look at a player like Anthony Davis. He's got the height. He's got the ability. He's running up and down the court. And he basically plays, you know, the majority of the games that you're expecting him to play ever since he's gotten back down to L.A. So I find it really interesting. He's got the size. Is this something it could help Dallas, I think, a lot in a lot of different ways. The guy is one of the best players in the NBA, I think. And at 31, 32, I think he could play till he's 37, 38-year-old type guy. But, you know, time will tell. I mean, you know, I don't know how many of us would have thought LeBron would still be playing at 41 years old.
So. Well, I mean, is he really still playing? He takes the court every third or fourth game. I know it's a touchy subject. Very interesting. Certainly has some implications for the Timberwolves as well, who had a tough one last night without Anthony Edwards. Again, setting home the idea that without Anthony Edwards, the Timberwolves just can't put it all together, despite how Chris Finch, how lackluster or lackadaisical he was about that. Listening to him in Al's news, I'm like, okay, that's the game you play, and this is, he couldn't hit shots.
That's a small sample size. I did hear his presser from earlier in the week when we had another blunder, and trust me, Finch is usually not the guy that's going to be super lackadaisical. He's usually the guy that will let you know how he's feeling about these guys, because
it is crazy.
He's pretty straightforward with the results as far as sloppy play and whatnot.
Where this team was last year and to where they are now.
It's not
and
that how much, bad, but it's bad.
But we all did. I'm fairly certain we all agreed. Yep, if there's one guy you can get rid of, it's Carl Anthony Towns, and they'll be fine. I said that.
Yeah.
That might have been. I've said a lot of stupid things on these airwaves and in person. That might have been the dumbest thing I've ever said, to think that you could lose a guy like Carl Anthony Towns and just pick up right where you left off.
For the record, Julius Randle, great basketball player. Sometimes you just don't gel. And that's just kind of I think we're seeing an example of that where it's like, as good as Julius Randle is as a basketball player, it's, you know, Dave, you'll get this reference. It's the Marty Hansel effect. You don't want to mess up the chemistry middle of the season.
Marty Hansel.
It's one of the worst things that's ever happened in Minnesota Wild history as far as trades. And it's like,
I don't know, Cam Barker for Nick Letty's up there too.
Yeah, true.
But, don't you think though that you got to give this a little bit of time? We gave the Rudy trade some time.
And it took him almost an entire year,
but it worked, right? I mean, all of a sudden there we are, and we're pushing, you know, the edges of getting almost to that championship game against Boston. I mean, so I don't know. I think it's still a little early to judge this one too much.
Sure.
But the other side of it too, and we all know this, but just so everybody else understands, money. It's a money thing. And that was the big Cat thing as much as anything was, all right, well, can you afford to pay Cat what he's going to want? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
We're getting a text from our good friend. Wolves were also without Ant, Randall, Nas, and Dante last night.
Yeah. Doesn't help.
All of them. So
it doesn't help.
Thank you to our good friend, our esteemed manager, Brad, for pointing that out. And we thank you for listening. Our favorite listener. We'll take a quick break. Come back. We're going to talk a little Wild hockey. Kevin Gorg is going to join us from FanDuel Sports North. Is what it's called now. I want to know what the heck happened last night. The Wild got crushed in Ottawa. We'll talk to him coming up next. 10:24 on a Sunday morning. Kevin Gorg joining us from FanDuel Sports North. Are you in Ottawa or are you back on the road, KG? Where are you?
We are in Boston. Got here late last night.
Oh, man.
The team has an off day in Boston, which is always cherished. Love this city. Love having an off day on the weekend here. We'll have a practice day tomorrow at Boston University, and then they'll play the Bruins on Tuesday. It's been a road-heavy schedule. This is another one of those long road trips. It's a five-game road trip with a little break at the front end where the Wild got to come home for a day after the game last Sunday in Chicago.
A very tough one last night against an Ottawa team that has some pretty good scorers. I don't think they're the caliber of the Wild, but to get run out of there 6-0, that's a lopsided loss, KG. What, in your mind, was the biggest factor?
I think the biggest factor was the amount of effort and emotion put into the game in Montreal two nights before. And I think people that watched and listened to that game, Marc-Andre Fleury's last in his hometown, they got a taste of it. But to be in that building and to talk to the players directly after the game about the impact that game had on them, all of us in the traveling party were talking in the day leading up to the game at Ottawa, a team playing extremely well, a team that plays with speed and very physical. And the Wild, to me, it was a letdown spot. Now, I didn't see 6-0 coming, but the game certainly had some caution to it leading into it. And, you know, let's be honest. When you play an 82-game schedule, you're not going to have your absolute best every night. And as I handicapped the game the next day, I think Ottawa had their absolute A-plus game, and I think the Wild probably had something closer to a C-minus or a D-plus game. And frankly, I mean, in a game where they lose 6-0, their goaltender was their best player. So luckily you can watch it, you can flush it. And I think if you go back to where we were a week ago, leading into that game against the Blackhawks, you had just lost on Hockey Day Minnesota. You weren't playing your best hockey. You just found out that Kirill Kaprizov was going to need surgery, and you had 5 straight games on the road. Well, here we are a week later. They're 3-1 on this trip, and you win on Tuesday night in Boston. You go 4-1. That's not a good trip. That's a great trip. So the game in Ottawa can absolutely be forgiven. I would expect a big bounce-back performance. And it wasn't a lot of fun last night, and there weren't a lot of happy faces as we went through customs. But I think this has been a team all year long that's overcome adversity and handled setbacks pretty well with good bounce-back efforts.
Kevin, when we really look at it, too, when you talk about getting all amped up for that game against Montreal and actually what Fleury was able to accomplish with 19 saves, pretty amazing. So you've got that energy level that lifted everybody up, I think, and then you've got all of these injuries. So is there anything that these guys are trying to piece together to understand why the injuries just keep on stacking up right now for the Wild?
Well, I think, you know, the way they look at it is that they're on the back nine in terms of dealing with these injuries. You know, the Kirill thing is obviously the elephant in the room, Pete. And certainly when you have high-end talent and a guy like Kirill Kaprizov, he could still be playing right now. We saw what he did in those couple games when he came back. But the Wild look at this season as a season where they want to be at their best leading into the playoffs. And they are going to be a playoff team. And so rather than have Kirill grind through it at 60 or 70%, they made the decision to get him 100%. And they're going to have to live without him for 4 to 6 weeks right now. But the silver lining is when they get him back in March, in the final month, the push to the end of the season, he's going to be ready to go. And, you know, the injuries, I think we've put a lot of it from a Wild standpoint behind us because Brodin and Johansson are the last two outside of Kaprizov, and they're both skating. And according to both Bill Guerin, who's on the trip, and head coach John Hines, as recent as yesterday, one or both of those guys will rejoin the team here in Boston and have a chance to play on Tuesday. So I can't explain how many they've had, why they've had so many. It's been certainly a stretch of bad luck when you look at the months they've had to play without them. But they've put themselves in such a great spot that you feel like if they can legitimately get close to 100% healthy in time for the playoffs, this is a team that's got a chance to do some damage.
Kevin Gore joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. KG, I know you were in the house in Montreal in the game the other night. We were watching it at home. Everybody in my family, including my wife, who's not the biggest sports fan in the world, had tears in our eyes. And I explained to them the reason why is that you love Marc-Andre Fleury because he's just genuinely a very good human being. He's also an outstanding, one of the best goaltenders we've seen. I'll just put that out there. Being in the house the other night, on television it looked amazing. What was it like to experience that those final few moments of that period where they're giving a standing ovation to him? The Canadian players are lining up at center ice to give him a high five. He comes back out. It was just it was one of those moments where I said, these are the moments that separate hockey from other sports. You don't see this in other sports. What was it like to be in there and witness that first person?
Well, I get chills just listening to you kind of recant the evening, and I did get choked up, and I did cry. And that hasn't happened a lot. In my 19 years on the job, it was extraordinary. And I think the thing with Flower, and I've tried to think about this and reflect on it, if he was a jerk, okay, if he was just not the greatest guy to deal with, and he had put together the career he has put together, 21 years, the 3 Cups, and just the way he has played with that acrobatic style, that entertaining vibe that he brings to every game, he'd still be revered. The reason he's beloved is the person he is. He never played a game in Montreal, but I think every fan base respects the person he is. They know the talent he has. And I'll give you just another example here in the last 24 hours of who this guy is. So our travel guy is Dominic Henning. He does a fabulous job. And we're at a hotel in Ottawa where there's a youth girls hockey tournament in town. And the hotel is littered with these 8 to 10 to 12-year-old girls, and they're hockey-crazy girls. So they figure out the schedule when the Wild are coming and going on and off their bus to get to the game last night in Ottawa. Now, if you're Marc-Andre Fleury and you're that level of star, you can talk to the travel guy, and you can find a different place to leave the hotel, get on the bus, and never have to see one person.
Yep.
Both after practice and then on the way to the game, this guy stopped for 10 minutes, took pictures, signed every single bit of hockey equipment, sticks, jerseys, whatever they brought to him, and did it with a smile on his face. This happens when cameras are not rolling in every city we go to. This is the guy that he is. And I think the impact that he's had on his teammates will last here for many, many years. I think of Rossi. I think of Boldy. I think of Faber. But how about this? Last night, I'm interviewing Devin Shore, who's been up and down from Iowa, who I would not classify as one of the closer teammates to Marc-Andre Fleury. And my question in that interview that we did on our broadcast was, what was it like to experience that in Montreal two nights ago? And he said it was the greatest game he's ever had from a perspective of, this is the coolest thing I've seen as a hockey player. This is Devin Shore. Imagine the effect it's had on some of the people like John Merrill that played with him in Vegas, Freddie Gaudreau, who's extremely tight with. I mean, Freddie was still choked up a day after the game talking about it. That, to me, is what tells you everything you need to know about Marc-Andre Fleury and the type of human being he is and the type of teammate he is here in Minnesota.
Hey, so Kevin, real quick, I know we're pushing the limits or whatever, but can we call him the Tom Brady of hockey? I mean, honestly, the career, the longevity and all of that, and outside of certain rivalries, probably one of the most liked guys, I think, around is Tom Brady. He's not as hated as maybe some would think. So I think that is it fair to compare those two?
It is. And I think the reason, you know, you look at Tom Brady and he's just more than his body of work. He's a rock star. Like, and the reason he's doing those broadcasts right now is he's Tom Brady. Marc-Andre Fleury has that effect wherever he goes. And I think the real cool thing that gets lost in the shuffle here, I mentioned the young players that look up to him, and I think that he's going to have an impact on their careers all the way through. But from talking to Fleury now in the last couple of months, his family loves it here in Minnesota. And his plan is to stay in Minnesota, have the kids go to school in our great state, and then probably be a part of the organization. So this is a huge win for Minnesota. And you look back at that move by Billy Guerin, it caught all of us by surprise a few years ago on trade deadline day. And I don't think you can fully encapsulate the positivity that he's brought, aside from the fact that he's played really good hockey for this team, all the other factors, the intangibles that come along with it. If and when this team makes a Stanley Cup run in the next handful of years, and I believe that absolutely is going to happen, I don't know if you can quantify just how much this guy has brought to this team and this organization. So the Tom Brady thing fits.
I would compare you and tell you you're the Tom Brady of ice hockey broadcasters, yeah, brother.
It's true.
I always appreciate you're the best, KG. Thanks for joining us, man. Thank you for the insight. And I hope they can get one in Boston.
Yeah, let's get a bounce back win, guys. And unfortunately, there are mirrors in my hotel room here in Boston, so the Tom Brady thing isn't going to work, but I appreciate the love.
Thanks. You're the best, buddy. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Kevin Gorg, FanDuel Sports North. We'll take a break and come back. You are listening to The Huddle. Get your kid out there to shovel the snow, would you, if you have a kid? I had a friend of mine, a guy that I worked with for many years. He gave me, so when I worked in television, Randy Shaver was my boss.
Oh.
And when I got here, one of his gifts to me was a snowblower. He had an old snowblower. It worked great. So Toro's a great snowblower. I said, Randy, you're just going to give me a snowblower? He goes, yeah. I said, well, how are you going to clean your driveway? He goes, I got a 17-year-old at home. He lives here for free. That's my snowblower. I said, okay, good.
It's true, though. That's how we do it here in Minnesota.
That is how we do it.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Yes.
So the Gopher basketball team had a really good stretch in the last week and a half.
You said stretch?
It was a good run.
It was a good run.
Three games.
Three games. Yeah. Is that not, that does not get, well, now according to Major League, three wins is a streak.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the question that I put in front of you, gentlemen. They beat Iowa, they beat Oregon, and is it Michigan they beat?
Michigan.
Yeah. And then lose to Michigan State and Washington at home. Do the three wins in what has been a, let's call it what it is, a not-so-great season for Ben Johnson and the Gophers, and I think we could all agree going into that that Ben Johnson's seat was probably a little hot, whether it's his fault or his own, and that's another question here. Did three games during this season, two ranked wins, do enough to say, okay, Ben, you can have another year here to try to make something of this, or... sorry, it hasn't done enough.
It's a great question.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I tried really hard on that.
Yep.
You're the best.
It's a great question because I think that a lot of people can take that either way. And I would take it more from the negative perspective, which is we've been at the bottom of the Big Ten now for what? The better part of 3 or 4 years?
Yes.
And when I say the bottom, we were rock bottom until that streak, as you said, and it's a three game streak.
I think they're still in like 12th in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they're second to the bottom.
Yeah.
So you know you always lose. It's not a 10 anymore. You know now it's whatever it is.
Big
16,
big
18.
80.
Yeah, it's too bad. But how about the fact that last night we go out to Washington and things don't go so well.
Yeah.
Actually, they come to here and they don't go so well. We were having a debate over that earlier. I just look at it as. You've got to look at the big picture. Are we filling up the barn for basketball games? The answer is no. Are we even very competitive outside of this couple of game streak? Not very much. Mm-hmm. We've just been at the bottom. So how long are we willing to be there? And I guess that's it. And I say all of this. I know Ben Johnson. I like Ben Johnson.
Ben's a good guy.
He's a Minneapolis guy, mm-hmm. Born and raised not too far from where I went to high school at Minneapolis Central near Washburn and all the rest of those city schools. But at some point, I think we have to realize that we've got to get somewhere closer to the middle and maybe with eyes on the top of the Big Ten. Isn't that the job of the basketball
yes,
coach? Right?
It is.
And we're not even close. I mean, we did have that little streak, but we're not even close. We're still the second to the bottom. And that's that's kind of what bothers me. You know, and then we go out and we lose to a Washington team who is at the bottom. They're the very bottom. I still think that there are some coaches out there that have Minnesota ties that I think make a heck of a lot of sense. And I'm not trying to look too far forward, and I'm not trying to put the pressure on Ben, but the pressure's on Ben anyway, right? Yeah. It's not me talking about this. This is the fans. And when I was in school, which is many years ago now, but even over the last probably couple of decades, that barn was pretty full. It was very close to full oftentimes. And we can't get fans in there anymore. And that's a problem, too, because this is another money-generating part of the world that we live in, right? Yeah. It's football, it's hockey, which is phenomenal, and then it's basketball. Well, basketball's not holding up their end.
Here's my issue, and it has less to do with what Ben Johnson has done and more to do with outside factors. One, who wants this job?
I got a guy.
How good is this guy that might take it?
Really good.
He's really good. Yeah. Is he going to deal with having to try to recruit against some of the? How's he going to try to recruit against some of the best coaches? And we've said this before. Look at the facilities.
Right.
They're the same as they were when you were in school, Pete.
That's true.
They haven't changed one bit.
Yeah.
And you're competing with schools that have top of the line facilities. You walk into Williams Arena and you sit down and they have a meeting with you and you hope you're not sitting behind one of those giant metal girders because you're not going to see anything anyway. But then you go downstairs and the floor is raised, which is fun and exciting, except if you go off it and rip up both your knees. And you go downstairs.
It's been like that for a long time, though, and I haven't seen too many.
It hasn't happened. But you go downstairs and you look at their locker rooms, and the practice facility in Bierman is nice. Yeah. It's new. But you talk about some of those other revenue-generating sports that Minnesota has. Football, new stadium in the last decade.
Yep.
Hockey has done renovations to Mariucci Arena, 3M Mariucci Arena. And what is basketball done?
Yeah.
They've done nothing.
They've been dragging their feet. That's a mistake.
If you want to compete with these Big Ten schools, go look at North Dakota State's facilities. Go online and take a spin around. North Dakota State, they have better basketball facilities.
I would say this. I think one of the problems, and I think you're right, I think you're on
something. And that's not Ben Johnson's fault.
No, that's not on Ben. That's the athletic department. They've got to spend the money to get that type of the thing. And they can sell that thing out, I think. And whatever they've got to do to make the facilities better, they've got to do. They've got to use that money, and they've got to do it. I do know of coaches that have Minnesota ties that absolutely, and I don't know that I want to throw out names, but I already have thought about this for a long time. As a matter of fact, long ago when I was, you know, possibly athletic director job, one of the things that I kicked around was, hey, who's going to be the basketball coach? Who's going to be the football coach? You've got to know those kind of things. PJ, I think, was the right guy for the football program. For basketball, that goes back too far because basketball changes a lot. But we are not just the state of hockey here in Minnesota any longer. If you take a look, sometime at how many basketball players come out of the state of Minnesota that don't come to Minnesota. They go to Duke. They go to Baylor. They go to Northwestern. They go to
North Dakota State.
All these other places. I mean, we do have basketball players. Gonzaga. I've got two friends that their sons both went to Gonzaga. Both of them are in the NBA right now. They never came to Minnesota. Didn't even think about going to Minnesota. They went to Gonzaga instead. That's part of the problem. Somehow you've got to convince those guys to stay in state, and we have not done a good job with that, in my opinion.
It is a chicken and egg. What comes first? You win, that you get the facilities, but you need the facilities to get the guys to win. And ultimately, I mean, in this day and age, it 2025, you walk a kid into an arena and you go, look at this place. Can you imagine it filled up? Your name on the scoreboard. Can you come down in this locker, see your nice locker? It's all this, and you got all these facilities, and then you come to the University of Minnesota.
Yeah,
this place was built during the Depression. I don't even know how long. You know, it's hard to attract those kids, and that's what it comes down to. Unless you're a consistently top five program every single year. And you can do what you want because that's, you're going to say, yeah, you want to play NBA? You got to come through here.
A lot of it's money too, Dave.
It's NIL money. That's the other part, right? That's what's going to get those kids is you have a better package financially for them than a Michigan State, a Michigan. Are you going to get that though? Probably not. Not anytime in the next few years.
Yeah.
And so all of that is to come back to say, is there really anybody out there that can succeed more than Ben Johnson, if they have to deal with the same, the same set of issues that he's been dealing with?
Yeah. Well, I do think there are a couple. I know of one for sure that would make a heck of a lot of sense. Great ties here to Minnesota, has recruited Minnesota outside of Minnesota better than Minnesota's done.
Yeah.
And so I think there are some opportunities out there. And I really don't want to throw out names just because I don't think that's fair to Ben. But
for sure.
I think the reality is that there is the opportunity to get guys like that to come back to Minnesota that still could recruit here. But to your point, we also got to get that money. And one of the things that we've not done a great job with is raising money. And raising money means, hey, take a look at 10 miles around the University of Minnesota campus and how many Fortune 500 companies are there. I can tell you there's more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And go 30 miles around that and then go 40 miles around that. Dave, there are so many, being a guy in the financial world, I can tell you, the companies that are here in the state of Minnesota, you've just got to hit up each and every one of them, get some money, get that money flowing, because someday these are the kids that are getting educated that are going to be going to those companies, right? They're going to be working at these companies. It's a great investment for them, and I think that's something that's been missed for years.
Well, we'll see. There's still some to play. We'll see what happens to Ben Johnson. I think we're both of the thought that he's a good coach.
Yep.
I honestly think if he he's got more coaching life in him. If he goes somewhere else, if that happens, he'll be successful.
Yep.
But I think more than anything, you got to change the situation over there, even more than the head coach. Mm-hmm. We'll take a quick break, come back. Chris Hines going to join us, and we'll talk about the Timberwolves. I want to know what he thinks of this AD Doncic trade. We'll talk to him coming up next. Chris Hine from the Star Tribune, Timberwolves beat, joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline up against the top of the hour here. Chris, I want your reaction first. We've said ours around the Doncic AD trade. What are your thoughts on this? Who won? Who lost? Is there a winner and a loser? Good morning.
Good morning. Absolutely stunned. Like a lot of people, I saw it live as it was happening on Twitter last night. Thought Sham Sharania might have been hacked, like a lot of people did. Just can't believe that this would happen. I mean, from my vantage point, I don't know how the Lakers aren't the winner of this trade when they get 25-year-old potential MVP in the deal. I don't really care that much about whatever they're saying about his conditioning. I've watched Luka Doncic in this league now, and he is a once-in-a-generation type of player. And so I don't know. I heard what Dallas was saying and what their GM was saying. I still don't buy it. I don't know where this went wrong or that relationship went sour or what they were exactly thinking or hoping for out of Luka Doncic. But yeah, 25 years old, could get better, you know, could still get better, could, you know, be in 5 years from now, you know, the best player in the league, perhaps. So who I don't know what Dallas is thinking, quite frankly.
No, it's my reaction. Why? Yep.
The complaints that we've heard have been that he doesn't come in shape, right? And that, I mean, this is coming from, you know, the upper end of things, but that he doesn't come in shape and he tries to work himself in shape and then he gets hurt because he's not in great shape. And that's sort of the gripe that they've had. And if that's true, then as he gets older, that's going to get worse and worse, I think. But I'm with you. I think he's a heck of a player. I also think that you know, the trade benefits both teams to some degree. But Chris, I'm curious about this. Rudy, I think Rudy has really stepped up this year. I think he's been pretty impressive to watch, and I think they need to get the ball inside a little bit more frequently than they have, just because he's so dominant inside, and he's had some great dunks of late. People are loving the excitement level that we're seeing out of Rudy. Do you see that as well? Do you feel like he is somebody that still has a lot of growth, even though he's gotten a little bit older?
I think the fit is always an interesting thing on offense with him, and especially as it relates to Anthony Edwards, even though, you know, Ant didn't play last night because of an illness. You know, finding Rudy and the ways in which they utilize him in the course of the offense is an ever-evolving thing, it seems like. You know, they're trying to use him in the middle of the floor a little more now. You see that in recent games where he'll get the ball right around the free throw line, and, you know, he has to make a decision on where the ball's going next, you know, which it's been pretty beneficial at times. He's made some good decisions, but then there are other times where, you know, he might make a bad decision. He turns the ball over. Just as when he's inside, sometimes the passes don't quite connect with him. They go off of his hands. And, you know, I think it's a constant work in progress with him, and especially Ant, to keep developing that rapport, developing that trust. And he has that with some other guys on the team, with, you know, with like Mike Conley, and, you know, even guys like Dante DiVincenzo before he got hurt, and Jaden McDaniels, who they actually have a surprisingly good connection sometimes out there. But with Ant, I think it's always a work in progress to have Ant trust Rudy on a night in, night out basis.
Chris Hine joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Chris, I always find it interesting when coaches get themselves ejected or tossed. I feel partially it is feelings, partially it is tactical. I do feel like this might have been tactical a bit by Chris Finch the other night when he gets tossed and then the team goes on to a win. But I also feel strongly that you can't pull this card so many times. And sitting where they are right now, just outside the Western Conference playoff bubble in seventh place, and considering what they've done over the last 10 games, was this the right time to pull that card? Do we know yet? Can we figure it out? Or do you think that am I making too much of this?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously they lost last night, but I think of all the frustrating losses they've had, last night was the most understandable considering their top four leading scorers were all out. So, you know, frustrating, yes, but, you know, I think you try to move on from that as quickly as possible. But I think Finch had just reached a point where it's, look, you're more than halfway through the season, you're coming into the All-Star break, you gave it time, you've given it half the season to try to make things work or try to develop these habits. When, if not now, are you ever going to get that lesson as a team? And I think he hit, I don't want to say a breaking point, but a point where it's like, okay, he's gonna step it up a little bit. He's always very candid in film, and I would say that there's, you know, multiple times a year where there might be a film session, kind of like the one that they had before the Phoenix game. And I think he just kind of hit that point in the season where it's like, look, we need to really drill down here, get better on a night in, night out basis. We don't have any room for error anymore. We've used that trying to figure things out. And now it's time to start putting wins on the board. And I think that's where they were at Wednesday. They come back and win Thursday in Utah. And obviously what happened last night happened. We'll see how they are going forward. But, you know, Ant was just out with an illness. So, you know, presumably he'll probably be back, I would assume, for tomorrow night.
All right. We hope so. Chris, thanks for the time. We appreciate you. Take a quick break. Huddle coming back at you next.